Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by my regular podcast partner, Jeff Rimebold. And we are going to look back on arguably the greatest Super Bowl ever. An absolute game for the ages. What a classic. Could even make the case that this was the greatest game in NFL history. Certainly one of the most remarkable. Jeff, I watched it back again last night. It was just something that I couldn't resist. I watched the entire game again and I kept thinking Atlanta were going to win again. And the New England Patriots run out winners 34-28 in overtime. Let's just set the scene. First reactions to what was an amazing game.
Well, you know what? My first reaction as we sat there in the watching the fourth quarter unfold was almost disbelief that a team that had was, you know, so off their game early. New England did some very unpatriot-like things early in the game, but just hung in there and kept making plays in the fourth quarter. To me, the one that spurred them on was Edelman's unbelievable catch. And you could almost see the pressure start to build on the Falcon defense when he made that play. And then I think there were some other significant plays along that line, you know, where they have a third and one and they try and throw it and get sacked. And, you know, again, there's some calls that you have to question. I saw Shanahan come out and say, you know, he blamed it and he blamed himself, said I blew it. But no one call or one play makes the game. It's just a series of plays in that second half, you know, that turn the tide.
Yeah, I mean, I watched, like I said, I watched the whole thing again, Jeff. And then I watched the interview with Tom Brady on the podium and he said, you know, we needed about 30 things to go our way. And he wasn't far off. As you watch the game back and you kind of take the time and you know the outcome and you know that the Patriots complete this 25-point comeback from down 28-3. As you watch, there are a good 10 or 15 things where you say the Falcons only have to have that one go their way and they're going to win Super Bowl, whether it's stopping one of the two-point conversions, you know, running the ball when they're at the 22-yard line and kicking a field goal, stopping Edelman's catch over the middle, Brady having a 15-yard run, which is a rarity, stopping a fourth down play. I mean, it was like once that snowball started rolling downhill for the Patriots, the momentum gathered and the Falcons couldn't do a lot about it. And Jeff, they were actually, Dan Quinn admitted as much, they were gassed. 93 plays for the Patriots, 46 for the Atlanta Falcons. It's the biggest disparity between two teams in playoff history, and it showed.
But there's no question. You can't play 96 plays of defense at full speed and going as hard as you can. And I wonder how much of those 96 plays. I go, the one play then that was pivotal to me, Neil, was you go back to the next to the last play of the game, where they try and throw a ball in the end zone. They got it first and goal, I think, at the 2. Mm. And then after the pass interference on Bennett. And then they try and throw a route to out of the backfield. And Beasley has his hands on the ball. And really, you look at the play, and I watched it again. It's not like he was contorted in some way or, you know, it wasn't really that tough a catch for him to make. And he makes that play. You know, Atlanta gets the ball at the 20 going the other way and they get the stop that they desperately need on the goal line. So, you know, it's always that way in football. It's those in big games, it's those small differences between winning and losing.
Yeah, I mean we all kind of glorified Julian Edelman's catch, which was ridiculous, Jeff. When you watch it in slow motion, it's impressive, but you think about it at full speed and how his hands come off the ball and then he gets his hands back under and makes that catch while he's putting his hands around either side of Robert Alford's foot and there's a pile of bodies there. But what you kind of, I think, got lost in the shuffle a little bit was Alford has the clean break on the ball and gets both hands on the football and it bounces off him into the air. Again, these are plays that are going to haunt the Atlanta Falcons because every comeback, especially a comeback of this size, Jeff, it takes two to tango. So as good as the Patriots were, the Falcons left some plays on the field which allowed New England to get on that charge.
Absolutely, and that's you said it 100%. And it's, you know, you're talking cliche sometimes, or people accuse you of talking cliche sometimes when you're a coach, but really it does come down to those things. Players making plays in critical moments, and you've got to, you know, you get an opportunity, you've got to make the play. And, you know, Shanahan's obviously going to be roundly criticized for throwing the ball in that situation when he got sacked, but Devontae Freeman blew the protection. You know, he allowed the blitzer to run free to the quarterback, and, you know, they knocked the ball out. And, you know, even look at the narrow, you know, the fine line between winning and losing. And if Matt Ryan's arm is 6 inches more forward, it's not a fumble. It's an incomplete pass. But that's the difference. There's so many of those 6 inches in a game. The 6 inches of Beasley not making the play. The 6 inches of the ball being off the ground or on the ground on Edelman's catch. The 6 inches of, you know, Ryan's arm going forward. I mean, it's just the incredible nature of the game. And, you know, these great athletes playing as fast as they play on that huge stage, it just magnifies everything.
Let's talk about a couple of the talking points, Jeff. We're not going to break down every score, every play-by-play, but let's talk about some of the play calling then as the Falcons got down the stretch, because you've mentioned it a couple of times there. And it's interesting because this was a Falcons team in control. They were up 28-3, and you see all the stories written as, oh, the Falcons were up 28-3 midway through the third quarter. No, the Patriots got their first touchdown with 2 minutes left. 2 minutes and 6 seconds left in the third quarter. So it was late when this charge came about. And actually, there was a thing on ESPN. They put it into like a computer prognosis thing. Midway through the third quarter, Atlanta had a 99.5% chance of winning this game, Jeff. But here's where I had a problem with it. And I know I questioned you and Ndamukong Suh about it in the studio on Sunday night. Not so much the third and one pass where Devontae Freeman misses the block and there's a sack and a fumble and a turnover, although I would have been conservative and I would have ended up probably punting it away. At least Tom Brady's got to go the length of the field. The one I have the biggest problem with is after Julio Jones makes that outstanding catch, it's 4 minutes and 40 seconds left in the game. They've got a first and 10 at the New England 22. Now, for me, the hay is in the barn then, Jeff. You don't need to be aggressive anymore. I know Dan Quinn said we're going to pedal downhill and we're going to be aggressive. I don't think you need to be there. That's a 40-yard field goal. For me, you run it three times, you chew the clock, and you kick a field goal. But as you and Sue said, the other view of that is aggression is what got you there all season long. I mean, now you've had a little bit of time to reflect on that. Did Shanahan get it wrong, or do you not have a problem with it still?
Well, I tell you, if you just evaluate it from coaching book, right? You go into the way you, and if you know, as we learn the game as coaches, you talk about 4 minute offense, right? And you've got 4 minute offense, you've got 2 minute offense. Mm. 4 minute offense, when you're headed in the game with the ball, 4 minutes left to go, you now become conservative in your play calling and you run and you do exactly what you said in that situation, Bill. You run the ball three times because if you think about it, three runs, if you're in field goal position, should take off a minute of the clock. So now you go up 31, it would have been 31-3 at that point.
You're up, you'd be up by 11 with probably 2 minutes left on the clock.
Right, you'd be up by 11, but with 2 minutes left on the clock. So then you force New England into scoring twice to beat you, right? Because they'd have to just to tie it, they'd have to score, go for two, and then kick a field goal. So if you look at it now in hindsight, obviously the better play would have been take it down inside of 3 minutes, kick the field goal, kick off, pin them deep, and then make them work to get two touchdowns to beat you.
Mm. Jeff, this was talked about. There was a couple of things written after the Super Bowl saying, oh, a bit of a shaky night for Kyle Shanahan, but surely this is on Dan Quinn as well, because although Shanahan would dial up the exact type of play, Dan Quinn could have easily said in his headset, give me three running plays here, couldn't he, Jeff? I mean, take us behind the scenes there.
No question. And usually there's on a staff, as big as these staffs are now, there's a guy that's his only job is situational football and clock management. So, again, he would be reminding both Shanahan and the head coach in that scenario, we're inside four-minute offense now. Let's run it. You know, here's how many timeouts they have. Here's how many timeouts we have. All that conversation is going on as plays are being run. And what was interesting, Neil, and I was going to mention it on the broadcast and didn't have a chance. When you watch the last quarter, especially as the Patriots really started to come back, Quinn took over the defensive call.
Yes.
You could see it on the side. He had the play sheet in front of his mouth, and he was making all of the defensive calls as it got down to the to the last 8 minutes of the game. And certainly I'm sure he had contact with Shanahan, should have had contact with Shanahan in that situation. Remember that the head coach always has the trump card. And, so again, if you're going to use that term lay blame, if you're going to lay blame there, you've got to put some of it at Dan Quinn's feet too.
Jeff, obviously we watched this game back and there's tremendous frustration at watching a team blow it the way the Atlanta Falcons, I don't know, maybe that's a bit strong actually. Did they blow it? I mean, they didn't take that final opportunity. They didn't finish the deal. They started the job and they didn't finish the deal. So there's always going to be frustration at watching a team blow the biggest lead in Super Bowl history and, all that's going to come with that and the challenges they'll have with that. But there's just as well this tremendous admiration for Brady, for Belichick, because, his body language wasn't great going into halftime, Tom Brady's. And yet, by all accounts, they were angry, but they weren't down. And Belichick's been caught on mic saying, our guys are going to fight hard. They're not going to give in. I mean, just this is a team that clearly never knows when it's beaten. And because they've built up enough of that experience in the bank to know that they can dig it out, they were able to do it.
Yeah, and it's so ironic because during the press conference, one of Dan Quinn's press conferences, I think it was on Wednesday or Thursday, the question came about them not being able to close off wins late or earlier in the season. And he talked about how adversity, can make you better if you approach it the same, if you approach it, from a proper standpoint. And he talked about how they had emphasized finish after those games and that he felt like they had done a better job of finishing as the season wore on and that finish was so important. That's one of the words you hear. If you go on a pro football practice field and you've been on a bunch of them, you hear coaches all the time talking about finish. Mm. And they didn't finish. They had a chance to finish and didn't. And so you put the shoe on the other foot and you look at New England and you're exactly right. There was a little 5-second segment where they showed Brady on the bench just right before halftime. And he and Josh McDaniels were talking, and you could tell Tom was he was more angry than he was anything. And as a matter of fact, I think he snapped a little bit at Josh McDaniels, because Josh was, I'm sure, trying to tell him, hey, hang in there. Mm. But, I think Brady knew he had not played well in the first half. And, the ball that he missed in the first half, you remember there were a number of them, ball that Edelman he missed,
yes.
Ball that Hogan missed, a ball that Edelman that got broken up by Alford because it was on the back half where the DB could make a play on it. He just was not sharp in the first half and then came out in the second half and was, razor sharp. And whatever he did to focus himself was, really, really great job by him. Some quarterbacks, just don't, they don't have that ability to, you use the phrase, and I think it's a great phrase, hit reset. Well, he had to hit reset at halftime. And I think I really truly believe that long, long halftime really was an advantage to the Patriots because the Falcons cooled off, right? They had all the momentum going into halftime. And then the Patriots had a chance to like a fighter who just hangs on until he gets the bell between rounds and can gather himself. north corner between rounds. That's exactly what the Patriots did.
That's exactly what I was just about to say to you, Jeff. I mean, Tom Brady was Rocky Balboa against Clubber Lang in Rocky III, where Clubber punches himself out, you know? I mean, they just...
Well, you know what? You know, that is a great analogy, because that's exactly what the Patriots did. They took advantage of that long time in the locker room to make adjustments. And then once they made adjustments, and really, I think the biggest adjustment they made was they started to stop the run. You know, the Falcons in the first half just gouged them with the run. And they weren't in their gaps. They were jumping around blocks. They were doing things that the Patriots don't do. And, you know, even those veteran players like Long and Minkovich and, you know, Hightower and all those guys really got refocused in the second half and played much, much better defense.
Yeah, it's interesting, Jeff. When the Falcons were up 28-3, after that, they ran the ball a total of five times. So, again, that's another thing that I think when they sit and dissect this game and reflect on it, not only did they struggle to run the ball, they almost neglected the run as well. I'm glad you mentioned Chris Long there, because this is what's great about Super Bowls, Jeff. And I want to get on to James White in a moment and his performance as the third string running back for the Patriots. But Chris Long was a guy who played all those years with the Rams, never had a winning record. Best record was 7-9, never got anywhere close to the playoffs. And here he is in the Super Bowl, having contributed about 30-odd tackles and four sacks in the regular season. And you think, that's not bad. That's not bad, but it was, you know, he's just a contributor. He's just a guy. He's not a true superstar. Yet he got low and around the corner and had one heck of a pass rush on the play where Jake Matthews grabs him around the neck and gets done for the holding penalty that pushes them out of field goal range. And you just think, it's just one play, but that's what Belichick was probably looking for when he made the signing.
Exactly, and you know, that's a play that doesn't show up in the stat sheet, per se, right? There's no Chris Long on the pressure, forced the penalty stats, right? But it is a huge, huge play, and, you know, I understand what Jake Long did, because he can't get a sack there either, right? But it was just a superior effort by Chris Long, and really, he is now... His skills have diminished such that he is now just a role player. But that's the beauty of the New England defense. They've got a lot of guys that are really just... Minkovich is a role player. Van Noy is a role player. I mean, you go through that bunch. Branch is a role player. Every single one of those guys on that defensive front understands their role, and I thought in the second half played the way we anticipated they would play the whole game.
Jeff, Tom Brady was named the most valuable player, and we'll get on to Tom Brady's status in the hierarchy of NFL quarterbacks in just a moment. But he went 43 of 62, 466 yards and two touchdowns. He was named the most valuable player for the fourth time in a Super Bowl. That's the most of any quarterback. He's now got the most wins of any quarterback with five. But James White, as I mentioned right towards the end of our Sky broadcast on Sunday, could have staked a claim, because he had 14 catches, 110 yards and a touchdown, six runs, 29 yards, two touchdowns, including the game tying touchdown and the game winning touchdown run. And he had a 2-point conversion run. And your answer to that was, well, isn't that typical Patriots? I mean, it's just what they do. It was an unsung hero again.
A guy that you could never have thought. I mean, here's LeGarrette Blount, set the Patriot record for touchdowns, 18 touchdowns during the year, and really after his fumble, I think he saw the ball like three more times. They have an unbelievable ability to feel what's going on in the game and insert players that can do what they need done. Obviously, White's a much better player out of the basket of catching balls and 14 catches for a running back, that is a phenomenal number. And, you know, again, the Patriot way, it's an uncanny thing. His statistics, you went through those stats, you know, those are football MVP stats.
Yeah, I mean, we had the question from Mike Needham in the mailbag, who said, Tom's given his MVP truck to James White. Do we agree with this? I mean, Tom Brady doesn't need it, and I guess he always recognizes he gave his last truck to Malcolm Butler. I mean, would you have given it to Brady, Jeff? I mean, for me, I think he orchestrated everything still, and I know he had a rough first half, but he still had to bring the team back. I didn't have a problem, and I have in the past thought that quarterbacks get handed this MVP trophy too easily, but I was not upset to see Brady get it. But I guess James White had a serious claim.
James, you know, in any other game, yeah, I would say, yeah, those running back numbers are, you know, MVP numbers, and they are. But in this game where you got a quarterback throw for 460, I think it was, that's an ungodly number, 460 in a Super Bowl. Mm. I mean, you know, usually if you throw for 300 in a Super Bowl, that's a huge game. Mm. But 460, and, you know, to really have it all put on your shoulders going down the stretch where you have to make throw after break that game down, you know, and this is something I'm sure the Falcon coaches are going to do. You look at the number of contested balls in the fourth quarter that he got in there, where there are very small windows where they have to make a play. I mean, you know, he's throwing comebacks outside to Hogan, and he threw the one to his rookie outside who slipped and fell down, and yes. he still put it in the only position that kid could make a catch. And, you know, some of those throws were, you just don't make throws like that under pressure in a big game. You know, I mean, it's just uncanny throws.
Jeff, it's the nature of the sport. It can be a cruel sport, and we focus on the winners. We will only have Julio Jones's ridiculous sideline catch as a mere footnote in this game, won't we?
Yeah, and that's just the way it is, though, because had the Patriots not closed that game out, had the Patriots not come back and won it in overtime, and let's say that Atlanta had won it, we'd all be talking about that unbelievable catch that Julio Jones made. And it's not even a topic of conversation because there's so many other plays that New England made down the stretch that really took the shine off that one superior play by an unbelievable athlete. Mm. His influence in the game was so strong, you know, so much of what happened offensively for Atlanta and didn't happen offensively for Atlanta was predicated on you know, what New England was doing. They were just doing everything they could to take out Jones and Sanu. Mm.
Jeff, late in this game, and I was listening to and watching some of the NFL Network coverage after the game, a number of Patriots were talking about how much conditioning helped them. So they were practicing in Houston in pads, and they were kind of laughing and saying, who does that during Super Bowl week anymore? We had the pads on and we were hitting. They talked about how they were still lifting 80% of the weights that they were in the off season. All the way through this season, they were having intense practices. Devin McCourty and Matthew Slater were talking about how much they were drilled even late in the season. And you always talk about this, how it kind of tapers off towards the end of the season. Does that have any impact, or is this because it was 93 plays run to 46?
No, I think it really does have a definite impact, especially when you consider that, you know, that's, New England's got a lot of veterans. And typically with veterans, you really cut back as the season goes on because they're veterans. But that's not the Patriot way. They stay with their fundamentals. They stay with their, you know, they coach those guys hard all through the season. And their practices are obviously demanding. And I think when you make those demands on guys and you get into these kinds of games, you get into games where you've got to reach down and you've got to, you know, there's a little bit of a gut check going on. They've got a reservoir that other teams don't have. And again, 96 plays is an unbelievable number in any game, but just an unheard-of number. Usually in NFL football, you're going to get 65 plays a game, right? 96 is that's like playing an extra half of football.
Yeah, no wonder they were gassed. I remember actually the last time I went to a Patriots training camp, it was the last year they came over and played at Wembley Stadium. I think it was 2012. And I remember we were chatting on the telephone while I was out in the States, and you was asking about the various practices I'd been to. And I said, no, I haven't seen anyone do any hitting. I haven't seen anyone put the pads on. And then I rocked up at Foxborough and they had pads on and everything was live and they were diving on fumbles. I mean, it probably wears you out over the course, and Belichick probably has to be careful with it, but they're not afraid to be physical, and maybe that showed in the biggest stage of all when they needed it the most.
Well, what did he say on the podium? You remember what he said on the podium when he got up to talk? He talked about, it's about these players, is what he said. And he said, we're unbelievably physically tough. And, you know, they're resilient, obviously, to come back from that deficit. But they were physically tougher than Atlanta when they needed it the most. And that was in the second half when the game really, really, the pendulum really started to swing and momentum got on their side. And, you know, they were physically, physically tough.
Patriots tied it up with 57 seconds left. We headed into overtime for the first time in Super Bowl history, and Matthew Slater called heads. It fell heads, and Ndamukong Suh said to us while we were off camera, Jeff, that defense has got to go back out there. And really, the writing was on the wall when you think about what had happened in the last quarter. It leads me to this question from the mailbag from Adrian Quinnell, who says, is it time to revisit the overtime regulations? It seems unfair that Atlanta's offense had no right to reply, and the game was over when the Patriots won the coin flip. Jeff, I think it's important to discuss here, as we start to discuss this, we're not taking anything away from the Patriots. They won it fair and square within the rules that apply to this day. So this question, I think, is being asked in regard to the future of the NFL, because often things change when things happen on a big stage. Are we at a stage now where both teams should have a chance to possess the football? Whether it be, because they kind of tried to fix overtime, and they've only kind of gone half measure, I think, with this. If you get a field goal, you get the chance to reply, but if they score a touchdown, you don't. Does it feel like we should have seen Matt Ryan get a chance with the ball in his hands?
Yeah, I really prefer the overtime that we have in the CFL, and which is much like the college overtime situation. Put the ball at the 35, you get a possession, and if you score, the other team gets the ball at the 35 and gets a possession, and if they score, they have the right, let's say you kick the extra point, they have the right to kick the extra point and force a second overtime, or they can go for two and try and win it. You know, again, the advantage there is always then to lose the, you know, to defer, because you want to know what you have to get. But it certainly does give both offenses an opportunity to possess the ball. And I think that's probably the most equitable way to do it.
Do you see it changing? It's a big change, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big change, but I think it's one of the changes that, like you say, you know, as you watch the NFL and how the competition committee works, they address issues as they come. You know, when the Patriots mugged all the receivers in the, I think it was 2001 Super Bowl against the St. Louis Rams, do you remember what the immediate reaction of the competition committee was? You know, then they got much more teeth in defensive pass interference and defensive holding and those things, because they wanted to make sure that the game didn't get one-sided and defenses were just beating receivers up past 5 yards and holding and grabbing and all that other stuff. So they changed that, and then they adjusted the overtime rule. I think they'll probably look at two things going forward. Number one is ability for the coaches to challenge on DPI, and two, the overtime situation where both offenses would have an opportunity to possess the ball.
Did you share that feeling that once that coin toss fell in New England's favor, it was a death knell for the Falcons?
Well, you knew that they were in trouble because of the fact they had been playing so much defense. Mm. You know, they just, you could see the pressure that they needed to get, that inside pressure, really disappeared down that, you know, late in the fourth and then almost non-existent in overtime.
Yeah, it was something that was so prevalent early in the game, wasn't it? I mean, Dan Quinn was preaching all week, we arrive at the football violently. That's our MO on defense. And that's exactly what they were at the start, Jeff. They were everything we had been led to believe they would be. They were fast, they were physical. The Patriots receivers were getting their hands on the ball, and when they were trying to pull it down, the Falcons were getting their hands in and breaking it up. I mean, everything was what Dan Quinn had said he wanted this defense to be, but it just couldn't be for as long as it needed to be.
Well, you know what? Let's go back to the maybe now the second greatest coach of all time in the NFL, Vince Lombardi. Mm. And one of his most quoted quotes is, "Fatigue makes cowards of us all." And whether that's, you know, when you say it makes there was no cowardly acts, like they turned it down by the Falcons. It just, they didn't have enough reserve in their tank to make those plays that they had to make. I mean, and it's almost physically impossible. 96 plays. I mean, at the tempo that New England was running those plays, particularly because they were in no huddle almost the last 8 minutes of the game. Mm.
We talked about Tom Brady, Jeff. Talk about Tom Brady. I think we'll save the best till last with Tom Brady. Let's talk about how the Falcons go on from here, because there can be a hangover. And they're going to start everything a month later than everyone else. That was classic Belichick, by the way, yesterday, wasn't it, Jeff? He's like, we're already 4 weeks behind in our preparation for 2017.
Yep.
That was just classic.
I mean, that is so much them. But you know what? I've been through this, right? And in the last 4 years, we've been to the Grey Cup twice and lost both times. And the sense of just emptiness that you get, and you know, we lost one. We actually returned a punt for a touchdown with a minute left to go in the game that would have won the game, and there was a real questionable block in the back call. Mm. And just that whole sense of I can't even describe to you the emptiness, the vacuum that it creates in you psychologically, and it is very, very difficult to come back from.
Well, Jeff, and there can be that hangover that is palpable, and you can see it because I think we saw it with the Arizona Cardinals this year. I think we certainly saw it with the Carolina Panthers. This is a young team. 7 starters on that defense are first or second year starters. Just a couple of quotes. Dan Quinn said there's no coaching manual for overcoming this. Ricardo Allen, the safety, said, "I feel dead inside. I don't think I'll ever get over this." This was not just a loss. This was a loss where you had a 99.5% probability of winning the game with 20 minutes left in that game. This is going to take some coaching and some rebuilding, isn't it?
Well, I think it's going to take some psychological work, really, frankly. And, you know, one of the things that Dan Quinn is really an out-of-the-box thinker on, a progressive thinker on, is using, you know, sports psychology, using, you know, every tool he possibly can at his disposal to reach players. And now he's got a huge task on his hands because, like, those comments are exactly what I alluded to. There's almost a vacuum that's created in his soul because you've given so much, you've come so close. And at halftime, you know, I can hear, the coaching points. 30 minutes to go, make it a 0-0 game, all that stuff is going being circulated around the room, right? We're 30 minutes away from being world champions. You know, all you have to do is just get some first downs and don't turn the ball over, and you're going to win the game. And just to have that be that sure that you're going to be a world champion and then have it taken away from you like that has just got to be mentally and emotionally devastating.
Yeah, I guess the one thing, if you're a Falcons fan, you look at what Dan Quinn is trying to do in Atlanta, and he's certainly building it on that defensive side. He's trying to create a team in Seattle's image, and if he's working that same way mentally, I mean, Seattle are a resilient bunch. They always seem to be very mentally tough.
Yeah, and I'm sure he's going to talk to Pete because, you know, Pete, what did you do when you got the game won? You're at the 1 yard line with the best back in football. Mm. And all you got to do, how did you come back from that? How were you able to rally the troops from that? So I'm sure that'll be one of the first calls he'll make is to Pete, and they'll discuss how they were able to move on from that experience.
Jeff, you're right.
Because Dan Quinn wasn't a part of that. He left right after that to go to Atlanta.
Yeah, he had. You're right about fine margins, Jeff, because, you know, we can credit the Patriots for winning couple of Super Bowls in recent years, but they're two bad play calls away from losing their last two Super Bowl appearances.
It It's amazing. It's just pressure. They just keep pressure on you, keep pressure on you. And whether it's a player not making a play like Beasley's play in the end zone or pass interference call, or Hope making a play at the wrong, making a bad call at the wrong time, they just seem to keep the pressure on you. And when you make a mistake, they take advantage of it.
Absolutely. Let's talk about Tom Brady then, Jeff, because he was outstanding in the end. You know, looked a forlorn figure just before halftime when Robert Alford goes 82 yards with the pick six. But Brady hung in there as well, and he gets his Super Bowl win number 5. He's the MVP for the fourth time. Yeah, like we said, 466 yards. Is he the greatest of all time now? I mean, you could go back through the history books and look at Otto Graham, who won a lot of championships before there was a Super Bowl with the Cleveland Browns. Joe Montana was a perfect 4-0 in Super Bowls. But for me, no quarterback or no team has ever had to dig as deep as this Patriots team did, Jeff. I mean, the record comeback was 10 points in a Super Bowl, and they've more than doubled that. Is Brady the greatest quarterback of all time now?
Yeah, I think, and I think that one of those contributing factors to that, when you hold him up to that standard, is the fact that he's doing it in a different NFL than Terry Bradshaw had, or Joe Montana had, or Otto Graham had, or any of those other guys. The deck is so loaded against you having that kind of success now with the salary cap, with free agency, with all of the things that weren't in place for those other quarterbacks that, you know, I just don't know how you can justify saying that he is not the greatest of all time.
Mm. Are the rules more in favor of Brady, though, Jeff, compared to those other guys?
Well, just in terms of offensively, they are, sure. I mean, offense, it's easier to move the ball offense. The game's different now, right? Mm-hmm. You never, even when you talk about a quarterback like Joe Montana, there was never a situation where he had to throw the ball 60 times to win it.
True,
right?
True.
It was a different kind of football back then.
So that brings pressure.
So that brings
pressure to Brady, the fact that sometimes it's more on the quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It was so much on him. And, you know, the incredible thing, and you hit it right on the head, and it's kind of sad, because I thought it was such a great point that you made in the broadcast, Neil, that when they got the ball at the 10-yard line or the 6-yard line or whatever it was, and the tying drive, you made mention the fact that Joe Montana was Tom Brady's hero as a kid, and Joe Montana made, it's almost like the same drive against Cincinnati to win that Super Bowl. That was an unbelievable, I thought that was really, really a great point, and I wish we could have amplified on it, because, you know, it was, somebody actually sent me a tweet and they said, is John Candy in the building?
Yes.
You know, because of, remember Joe's quote to us, they get in a huddle and he looks up and he goes, hey, is that John Candy? He probably got 90-some yards to win a Super Bowl, and you're worried about whether John Candy's in there.
That's one of the few ones where Montana's not been bested by Brady. Brady went 91 yards, Joe Montana went 92, Jeff. But I just wanted to drop a little bit of history in there for our viewers, and it felt like it was fitting, because Brady has been a huge Montana fan. When I sat and interviewed Brady in training camp one year, his eyes lit up when he talked about Joe Montana, and really he's broken the tie with his hero, and he stands alone now at the top of the mountain.
Yeah, I don't, you know, like I said, I thought it was a tremendous point you made in the broadcast at that point, and you know, it really, you know, it's almost irony. It's almost just poetic justice, or whatever you want to call it, that it would happen that way, and that he would now step in front of Montana for most Super Bowl wins and you know, most all of it. So I just think it was really a great point that you made during the broadcast.
And Bill Belichick, Jeff, he doesn't have his name on the Super Bowl trophy like Vince Lombardi. He had to break his own tie with Chuck Knoll and Don Shula, but he now has 5 Super Bowl wins as a head coach, a couple more as an assistant. I mean, where does Belichick stand for you with head coaches again? Because he's, I don't know, it just feels like he does it with a different cast of characters every time, Jeff. There was only 23 remaining on that roster from the last time they were in the Super Bowl. So he churns it over year in and year out, and already he's probably thinking about 2017.
You know what, I've been involved in and Jimmy Johnson said there's nobody who's ever coached in the NFL better coach than Bill Belichick. And I just really believe that you can bear that out a number of ways. Again, same thing. You're in a different era than Chuck Noll was in. You're in a different era than Vince Lombardi was in. You know, those great Packer teams were together the whole time because they couldn't leave. That's the way it was back in those days.
Right.
And so you look at them, the same thing with the Steelers, and to a certain degree, yet to a big degree, the same thing with the 49ers. So you look at that and you say, here's a guy that's done more with less, frankly, in my opinion, and in a tougher time to do it. So, you know, there's no question in my mind.
Just as we wrap up, Jeff, I started this podcast today by saying one of the greatest games ever. Do you feel that same way? I look back at this and I did a thing on TalkSport yesterday on the radio here in the UK, and I said I was very fortunate a few years ago to be in Istanbul for the Champions League final when Liverpool were dead and buried at 3-0 down at halftime. They brought it back to 3-3 and they won on penalties. It was one of those where you wake up the next day and you think, did that really happen? And yesterday, when I eventually woke up from our Sky Sports coverage, it was almost a dreamlike quality to it. I was trying to think back, did that happen? Was that real? I mean, just as we sum up here and we put it into the kind of historic context, you've seen a lot of football over your years. What were your final thoughts on this game?
I don't think there's any question. It was a game that was, you know, exactly what we anticipated it would be. A back and forth, last possession, shootout kind of football game with great plays on both teams, on both sides of the ball. And, you know, I just feel blessed and proud to have had an opportunity to bring it to the fans, to broadcast the thing. And because if you weren't a football fan going into that game, you certainly were coming out of that game. It's amazing. I got stopped in the airport on my flight home, and the two guys were talking, and one of them said that he had his friend over to watch the game with him, and the guy wasn't a football fan, but now is a huge New England Patriot fan just because of that game.
Yeah, that's what we do. See, we grow fans all the time. That's what we're trying to do. Jeff, it's been a lot of fun this season, but I'm not about to sort of sing Auld Lang Syne or anything and call time on this podcast, because you always say there is no off season. We're gonna be back next week, and we're going to start our pretty popular State of the Franchise series, right? And we've got the draft coming up. We've got the combine.
Yeah, there is no off-season in the National Football League because, like Coach Belichick said, they're 4 weeks behind. You think they're going to – they may go to the parade, but I'm sure as soon as the parade's over, they're back in there grinding on film, looking at draft picks, thinking about who they're going to lose in free agency, gain in free agency, how they're going to reshape their team. You know, and that's all 32 teams are doing it. So we're going to bring – every week we're going to bring it to the listeners and give you an opportunity to stay in tune with what's going on in the league and, in particular, in tune with what's going on with your football team.
Yeah, and there's always news around the league. Kyle Shanahan, of course, just been named head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. We'll have free agency in March, and that's always so exciting. But we will kick off our State of the Franchise next week. And discuss the fortunes of teams like the Cleveland Browns, the San Francisco 49ers. So we'll bring all of that to you next week. But Jeff, just remains to say, great job this season. It's been a lot of fun, man. And we'll take a big break all the way around till next week.
You got it, buddy. As I said, it's always a pleasure to come over. And we got such great fans in the NFL, fans in the UK. And as always, Neil, you know how I feel about you. You make every day we go to work fun. So I appreciate you.
All right, man. Good stuff. Until next week, then. Let's say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.